This is Digital Story Podcast number 866, October 25th, 2022. Today's theme is Putting the AI in Image with Aaron Hockley. I'm Derek Story. Like any disruptive technology, artificial intelligence has its share of misconceptions. It's not that it's coming, it's here. To help make sense of what's going on right now, I sit down with photography technologist Aaron Hockley to discuss the role of AI in imaging today. I hope you enjoy the show. So welcome to the Artificial Intelligence Show, done by a real human, however. Right? We're still not 100% AI. I'm still here, still talking away. But the subject of what I will be discussing today will be artificial intelligence. We've got a great interview with Aaron Hockley. He's the author of The Computer Ate My Photos and runs the website Tech Photo Guy. And he sits down with me in the Santa Rosa studio. He came by and we talk about artificial intelligence in photography. And I'm going to get to that in just a second. Then we also have today an On1 Resize AI 2022 review. And I'm going to point you to a review just because it covers all the bases, but I've been testing it myself, so I will add on as well. And this is pretty cool software that uses artificial intelligence to do a better job, and it does a great job. And then finally, our third story will be about Adobe Max 2022 and the major updates to Lightroom. So let's get started with our chat with Aaron, and then we'll go from there. Aaron, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, it was great to catch up with you while I'm here in town.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun when people come blowing through Santa Rosa, because I don't really think of Santa Rosa as being a blow-through town, you know? And yet, here you are.
And yet, here I am. I had to come check out some of the great breweries in the area, so.
That is worth it right there. We've known each other for a while, and you've got your hand in a number of things, photography-wise right now.
Right.
Why don't you just kind of give us a thumbnail of what you've been up to?
Sure thing. Yeah, I've kind of been in the photography world for, oh gosh, over 15 years, I would say, at this point. And my background is in the tech world, and then I got into photography and found myself kind of at the intersection of those two in a lot of different ways. And, now I'm kind of known as the Tech Photo Guy, and techphotoguy.com is my website. And what I find is I'm spending a lot of times writing, speaking, creating videos around helping photographers with the technical side of not just photography, but also their photography businesses at times. And one of the ways that's played out is over the last couple of years, I've been deep kind of in the world of artificial intelligence and photography. I wrote a book on that that was published late 2021. And so, it used to be that AI was this kind of crazy futuristic robot thing that we heard about in science fiction novels. And now, as even a casual photographer, you're using the benefits of AI in your photography, whether you realize it or not. And so it's a fun space to be in.
It is a fun space. And I thought that would be something that we just talk about for a minute, maybe like three surprising areas that AI is affecting our photography that we might not be thinking about that much. We might have some kind of vague, foggy idea, but we can put a finer point on that here.
Right.
So do you have any of those top of mind that maybe we could talk about?
One good example, I think, would be this notion of digital zoom and kind of image enhancement and digitally cropping an image, maybe even at the time of capture. So if those of us like you and I have been in photography for quite a while, we remember digital zoom from, 15, 20 years ago of kind of being the last resort, right? You wanted optical zoom. If you had to resort to using digital zoom, you knew it was going to look like crud. You might be able to sharpen it a little bit later in Photoshop or your editor of choice, but you know, digital zoom was what you did when you had no other options because the quality was going to be bad. Now, what we found is that through computational photography and AI being used to enhance images, is that, you know, that digital zoom of the olden days is gone, and it's been replaced by a very, very workable system. And this is kind of across platforms, across technologies. Adobe, in their editing suite, you know, they talk about super resolution is the term that they use, where you can essentially zoom in on a section of an image, crop to it, and then it'll use AI to really enhance the details in that piece of the image. You know, but even if we look at the latest iPhones that came out, were just announced by Apple in, you know, fall of 2022, you know, we see that they're now offering essentially the option to, you know, crop and zoom on a piece of the iPhone sensor. And it uses that computational photography to understand what's in that image, to enhance the detail in that image, and not just kind of with a broad kind of ham-fisted across the image approach, but contextually based on what it sees there. And so it can understand that, oh, if this is a person's skin, I want to treat that differently maybe than if this is, you know, their sweater or something like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the 14 Pro is interesting. Actually, I just talked about this in a recent podcast. So it has the computational digital zoom part. And then, because of the larger sensor, right, now they're, when you're using the main camera, which is normally, you know, 24 millimeter equivalent, they're taking the center part of that sensor and allowing you to basically do a 48 millimeter lens, right, with where all they're doing is just using the center part of the sensor. So
right,
a lot of clever stuff is happening. And then they throw in their, like you said, their algorithm secret sauce, and wow, you've got a really nice picture, and you have a whole new option.
Right, yeah. It's something where, you know, we have this flexibility now, and you know, obviously with our iPhone, it's great because it fits in our pocket and it gives us more options in that space. But even with, you know, even with a bigger camera, with a mirrorless camera, like, you know, like we both shoot and many photographers shoot, you know, the ability and knowing that you have that flexibility to do some of that digital cropping and zooming later, you know, might mean you don't need to carry as many lenses with you or don't need to buy another lens or something like that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about another common one. You and I were actually chatting about this earlier, which is HDR as it relates to smartphones, and how it's really become now kind of a foundation technology and not this weird kind of, you know, over the top sort of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, again, 15 years ago, we thought of HDR as being essentially a photographic style, right? You would bring your images into some HDR software and do some crazy tone mapping and often come up with, you know, some sort of surrealistic Technicolor art piece. And
sometimes questionable art piece.
Sometimes questionable, right? That was definitely a case where...
Asterisks there.
Right, somebody slid that slider too far.
Yeah.
But now, if we go back to kind of the fundamentals of what HDR is, it's multiple exposures at different exposure levels that are then computationally combined to give you one resulting image where it, you know, tries to preserve as much detail as it can, and, you know, whether that be in the highlights or the shadows. Our smartphones, you know, because when you look at the physics of a smartphone, right, you've got tiny lenses, tiny sensors, you know, whether we're talking an iPhone or a Google Pixel or a Samsung phone. And so they have to overcome those physics limitations with computational photography. And so they can capture multiple images, blend those together on the fly in the smartphone to give you a better dynamic range. And that's, you know, that's the DR, and HDR is dynamic range. It gives you a higher dynamic range in your image than would otherwise be possible with that tiny camera sensor. And that happens with every single photo you take now, whether it's on an iPhone or an Android device. It's doing that HDR automatically to give you the images that you see.
Yeah, and you know, the way that I get reminded of that, I have a iPhone 12 Pro Max, okay? That's when they first introduced Pro RAW, which I like. Pro RAW is very interesting. And so what they show you is the HDR computational photography shot on your phone. But then if you go, if you get all, you know, cocky and photographer-y and say, well, you know, I want to work on the RAW file. I want to make it better. So open it up in Photos, for example, and then you switch from what they're showing right. you to the actual RAW file, the DNG file, and you go, whoa, that is ugly.
Right, right.
And, you know, here I'm thinking I took a really cool shot and I'm going to make it better. I've got to start from ground zero, you know, with this DNG file.
Right, right. Yeah, my shadows are really too dark and my highlights are really too bright. And, you know, and yeah, now you've got to do that work manually
yeah.
that Apple was doing automatically as part of its algorithms.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, that HEIC probably wasn't such a bad shot after all.
Yeah, I'm finding, you know, even though the iPhone, which is kind of my mobile camera mm-hmm. of choice as well, you know, even though it can photograph in RAW, and, you know, I've done a bunch of kind of testing and examples with, you know, Pro RAW on my iPhone 14 Pro, realistically, most of the time, I don't really need it.
Yeah.
Most situations, the camera is smart enough, the algorithms are good enough that if I shoot in HEIC, mm-hmm. I get a good, solid, usable image with enough detail in it that I can work with it. It's really only if I have a really challenging lighting situation where I'll go to that RAW because I know that maybe I am going to want to tweak it myself later on.
You know, and what's interesting about that to me, I've actually thought about this some, is that, you know, that compared to the RAW file, the HEIC is a higher level shot. In other mm-hmm. words, it's already worked on the shadows. It's already worked on the highlights. It's already adjusted the color. It's already done a bunch of stuff. So if I have to do anything to it, it's fine that it's not a RAW file because it's minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, basically what I'm doing a lot of times, adding a little definition, maybe sharpening up a little bit more, maybe just tweaking a color. Maybe I want the blue sky a little lighter, darker, that kind of stuff. JPEG or HEIC file is fine with all that. It doesn't really compromise it that much, but I'm starting at such a higher level.
Right. I feel like JPEGs or HEIC files, you know, they maybe got a bad rap years ago because, you know, they are compressed, right? You do lose a little bit of data when you save a JPEG file. And now if you open and re-save a JPEG file 15 times, you're going to see a lot of data degradation. But as serious photographers, that's not usually what we do, right? Even if we start with a JPEG, we bring it into our image editor of choice. We generally perform a bunch of editing to it. At some point, we kind of get it to a point where we think we're done, and then we either save that out or, I mean, you know, or if we're using just a non-destructive editor, we kind of have that edited version to work from, you know.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people understand how non-destructive editors work. Even basic Photos app, right? Mm-hmm. They're not editing the original file.
Right.
When you,
right.
you know, what you're doing is you see the original file, you apply whatever edits you're going to do. Then when you output that file, what the application does, it reads the original file, it applies the instructions, XML instructions or whatever, and then it generates a new file and it outputs that. So you could open and edit that file many times, and the app is smarter than that. It's not like degrading your original. It's not doing anything to your original. It's just reading it.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, a lot of the challenges that we had many years ago, you know, the editing apps, Apple Photos, Adobe Lightroom, you know, Capture One, all these different apps, they've gotten smart, right?
Yeah.
They've figured out how to help us be productive as photographers and keep that image quality that we're looking for.
Yeah. Okay, let's do one more.
Sure. So speaking of all those modern editing apps,
right.
One of the other areas where, and this is something where you do hear the companies kind of specifically talk about AI, and as we record this in October of 2022, I saw just this morning another announcement from Adobe about a new version of Lightroom with some of this in it, which is masking capabilities in our editing apps, because we were chatting a little bit and it turns out neither one of us is a big fan of manually masking our images. You know, I'm one of those persons who, you know, if I have a portrait and I need to, you know, cut a subject out from the background, or if I need to, you know, try and tweak something and they've got some great hair going on and I've got a mask around that hair or a dog or something like that, Man, I hate that. I hate the amount of time it takes. I will happily spend money on, you know, plugins from different companies to make it easier. But when we look at what can AI do for photographers, you know, object and subject recognition are a big area that comes to mind. And so the ability to use an AI-powered masking tool in Photoshop, in Lightroom, in On1, Apple Photos now kind of has some of this built in, even though it's kind of implicit. They don't call it out as masking, but it's what they're doing. It lets us select that subject. It lets us select that, you know, person we've taken a portrait of, or select that dog or that car or whatever the case may be. And the fact that we can do that with one click now, as opposed to how many minutes or hours of masking in the past, it's kind of amazing.
It is. I was testing, you know, the new On1 for a podcast I did a couple weeks ago, and I was very impressed with how well it did that, identified subjects, make it really easy. You're not even working in layers anymore. You're just working on a canvas, and you're just choosing different parts of it mm-hmm. and adjusting it. And then, on top of that, they're using AI subject recognition to help you with keywording.
Right.
Which I thought, that is brilliant. You know, that is, I mean, talk about another mundane task that I don't like.
Exactly. Yeah. And this whole notion of keywording, actually, there's a chapter in my book where I talked about kind of the future of metadata and what that might look like with AI, because right now we add all these keywords to our images so that we can find them later, right? That's the whole reason we do it. We don't just do it for fun. It's because if I want to find all my waterfall images, I want to have keywords associated with that or whatever. But, you know, you can open up your iPhone or Google Photos or whatever and tell it you want to find all your waterfall photos, even if you've never keyworded them, and what do you know? It's going to come back with all your waterfall photos.
Absolutely.
And so keywording step that we used to have to do is becoming less and less important. Now, it may not, it may not necessarily know that, oh, you took this photo inside of, I don't know, the Santa Rosa Event Center or something, mm-hmm. but you might still have to do that. But if it has GPS location, it might be able to start inferring things like that. And we're not quite there yet. There's all these little pieces of subject recognition, you know, recognizing people, right? Once you tell it that, hey, these are three photos of Derek's story, now it can figure out all these other photos of Derek's story. You know, keywords, location, all of these things, they all kind of work on their own right now. Mm-hmm. But if you think about the possibilities for where we might be if they start relating together, there's a lot of interesting possibilities there as to what our applications will be able to tell us about our photos, even though we haven't told the application that information.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I like about it, it's not taking away anything that I truly enjoy,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, if it was taking away like the joy of photography for me, that would be different, but it's not. Actually, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about was the stuff about photography I didn't necessarily enjoy.
Right.
And
right.
Now I get to play more with the stuff that I do like, which is composing, traveling, you know, interacting with people, all that stuff. AI is just like clearing the path so I can do more of that. So I think in this sense that, I'm enjoying the direction that is going right now.
Right.
I know people worry that, well, pretty soon, everything's just going to be automatic. It'll just take a picture. You know, you just think of a subject and it'll produce a great picture. I'm not going to worry about that because there's always a way that we can add our own personal stamp to any image, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your book and where your website is.
Yeah, so the book is called The Computer Ate My Photos, Artificial Intelligence and the Future of Photography.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it through Amazon.com, and I'm sure you'll put a link in the show notes as well.
I will.
Direct people there directly. My website is techphotoguy.com, and people can go there and sign up for my email list. I send out a weekly email every Sunday evening for photographers that kind of rounds up the latest interesting things in the tech photo world, usually with my spin on how it actually impacts you. And the other place I would say that's interesting is I'm growing YouTube channels. So if you look for Tech Photo Guy on YouTube, you'll find me. I'm trying to publish at least once a week. It's a mixture of, you know, how to, what's ahead, how to be more productive with technology as a photographer. And like you, I love getting out, talking to people, interacting with photographers. So folks can feel free to reach out to me through any of those methods.
Great. Hey, Aaron, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks again. It's been fun catching up.
Yes. That was terrific. Thanks, Aaron, for coming by and sharing your knowledge with us. I truly enjoyed our sit down. On One Resize AI 2022 review. And you can read this entire article on lifeafterphotoshop.com. So I'm just going to read you a little bit here and then I will comment as well. On One Resize AI 2022 is extremely impressive, both as an image size upscale for large prints and as a tool for making lower resolution images from older cameras usable again. Its ability to reconstruct textures is extraordinary and uses the power of AI to work out what it's looking at and what it should look like when enlarged. The results are noticeably better with higher quality, larger sensor originals to work with. However, the $99.99 app does seem expensive. I'm just going to insert a footnote there. There's a lot of different ways to get it for cheaper than that. Then again, On One Photo Raw 2022 users will get this AI resizing in a free update. That's one of the ways. And On One Resize AI 2022 will also be free to those who bought the non-AI On One Resize 2022 product. Okay. And there's still other ways, but we won't dwell down into that right now. Let's find out if this is something that you're interested in first, right? All right, let's do a few pros and cons according to lifeafterphotoshop.com. The pros: incredible detail rendition. Works on JPEGs, doesn't need RAWs. Easy presets for different print sizes and aspect ratios. Optional output sharpening, cropping, gallery wrap feature. Resize by pixel dimensions, percentage, megapixels, and print size. Has a couple cons. Less effective on small sensor images or compressed JPEGs. And quite expensive if you pay the full $99 price. And then you can read the entire review in the link in the show notes. And really, he gets into all sorts of stuff. And if you're interested in the software, you'll want to go over there and see everything that he has to say. I have a few things to say as well. First of all, I used the software on a project where a family member brought an old black and white print to me that was 2 inches by 3 inches, had been, you know, slightly abused, but was super important to them, super important to them. And what they wanted to do was make a print, actually on aluminum, that they could put on the wall and give as a gift. And they wanted that print to be fairly large, around 11 by 14. So I'm looking at this 2-inch by 3-inch black and white print. And it had pretty good detail in it, all things considered. And the flaws in it in terms of the, you know, the fold marks and things like that, I felt like that would be easy enough to fix. So I took it on. I said, yeah, let's do it. So the first thing that I did was, you know, I scanned it at the highest resolution I could with my flatbed scanner and saved it as a TIFF. And then I opened it up in some software and fixed it up, you know, got rid of the creases, you know, just did all the basic things, opened up the shadows a little bit. You know how on these old black and white prints, the shadows can be pretty plugged. So I just did some of that basic stuff, still saving it as a TIFF, kept it as a TIFF. And then when I was done with it, I opened it up in On One Resize AI 2022. And I did 2 passes on it. Now, I probably didn't have to. It's something that I started doing back with Photoshop. And so I thought, okay, this is a safe way to go. So I did the first pass. I enlarged it 200%. I used the percentage, added a little sharpening, did some stuff, looked at the output, and it was really nice. It looked good. The detail was there. Texture was there. Very high quality. So I did it one more time, 200%, did it again. And that gave me a file size that was easily big enough to send off, and they're going to send it out to Bay Photo to make an aluminum print with that file. And what they're going to get back is an aluminum print. I think they're going to do 11 by 14. It will look terrific. I mean, it really will look terrific. And it just kind of boggled my mind that I could take this old 2-inch by 3-inch print, scan it on a regular flatbed scanner, nothing fancy, just the one I have here, do a little touch-up, use one of these AI resizing softwares, in this case On1s, and get the file size up to the point to where we could make something that you could hang on the wall and have it look good. And, you know, also I'm looking forward to working with some images from older cameras with, you know, smaller megapixel counts. And suddenly I feel with software like this that it just opens up a whole new world. I don't even have to worry about the camera that I'm shooting with anymore. I can just shoot with whatever I want, knowing that if I need a little bigger file, I can make it. I have a link to On1 Resize AI 2022 in the show notes, and you can see all the different ways that you can get it. So that is a look at On1 Resize AI 2022. Adobe Max 2022, major updates to Lightroom and Photoshop, plus more on Adobe's AI future. And you can read this entire article on dpreview.com. I'm going to read you just a few paragraphs because this is pretty interesting and fairly dense what just happened at Adobe Max regarding Lightroom. All right, so here we go. The updates to the Lightroom ecosystem make it easier to use masking workflows, remove unwanted elements from images, and utilize AI masks on mobile platforms. More advanced AI-powered masking is available on Lightroom for desktop, Lightroom Classic, and Adobe Camera Raw. This time last year, Adobe introduced re-envisioned selective adjustment tools, including Select Sky and Select Subject. Today, Adobe builds upon these tools with an all-new Select People, Select Objects, and Select Background. Powered by Adobe Sensei, Adobe's AI technology, retouching portraits is much easier with the new Select People. The software can detect and generate high-quality masks for individuals or groups in any portrait and can select specific body parts such as face, skin, body, skin, eyes, teeth, lips, hair, and more. Also, Select Objects is now the quickest and most flexible way to mask objects in Lightroom, says Adobe. You paint over the desired object with Brush Select or draw a rectangle around the object with Rectangle Select. The AI will then automatically refine the edges and create a precise mask. If only I had that 20 years ago, right? The new Select Background option makes it easier to choose the background of an image. Before, you could use Select Subject and then invert the mask. Now you can achieve the same result in one less step. Across all Lightroom apps, there's a new Content Aware Remove feature. Based on the same technology as Content Aware Fill, Content Aware Remove will adaptively fill in removed blemishes based on the surrounding content. You can also manually select the sampled area for more fine-tuned control. And there's more. I'm not going to read you all of it. But wow, I mean, what a apple cart full of new tools came out of Adobe Max for Lightroom users. And you know what, just top of mind, what this feels like to me is that if you really prefer Lightroom, if you're an Adobe user and you really prefer Lightroom to Photoshop, you just like the environment better, and of course it was designed, Lightroom was designed for photographers, then I just feel like with these new tools on the desktop app, that you're going to be able to stay in Lightroom almost all the time. I mean, Content Aware Fill and Content Aware Remove, I mean, you have that in Lightroom now, you know, that's just really beautiful. That's really nice. So I'm really happy for Lightroom users who have had to use Photoshop for certain things in the past, but now can really just settle in, you know, use their Lightroom app and just create great images and do just about anything that they want with them. So wonderful news out of Adobe Max 2022. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of this in action. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Let's start out with the new Nimble Photographer Weekly newsletter. Now, I think it's a month old now. So it's still new, right? It's still new. It's new to me, and it's probably new to many of you. And it comes out every Thursday. It's free. And it really gives me a chance to address things that happen, you know, later in the week after I do the podcast. It gives me a chance to do reader polls, more images. I can put audio and video snippets in there. I can publish essays that I've written on photography. And you never really know what combination of things that you're going to get. If you haven't signed up for it yet, then all you have to do is click on the link in the show notes for the Nimble Photographer newsletter, or just go to thenimblephotographer.com, and right at their top, you'll see the sign up for the newsletter. You can do it there. And it'll help you keep up with what's going on. This is going to be particularly important when I announce the workshop season for 2023. You're going to want to be able to keep up on all the news that's happening around that, and then all the other good stuff that we do. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's free, and I think you'll be really happy that you did it. A big shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast and this community month in and month out, not only with their pledges, but also with their advice, their support. And they support each other through the interactions on the exclusive Inner Circle group that they have on Derek's Story Online, where they can ask questions, you know, run things by other photographers, show pictures and ask for feedback. We have a monthly photo challenge, all that good stuff. And as we approach the 2023 workshop season, Inner Circle members get discounts on all workshops, whether physical or online. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look around, and hopefully you will join us in 2022. And thanks so much to our Inner Circle members. I want to mention that I have affiliate links in the articles on the Digital Story, and I have tiles for both B&H and Amazon in the second column on every page of the Digital Story. If you're going to make a purchase on either Amazon or B&H, if you would stop by the Digital Story first, click on one of those tiles. It'll take you right over to those respective websites. Then you can navigate to what you're going to shop for, what you're going to buy. And the affiliate code will be set for that session. And it really helps us out here. It doesn't cost you anything more. All it really costs you is one extra click to the Digital Story first. Those of you who are doing it, I so appreciate it. It really means a lot. And just keep that in mind next time you're thinking about buying that brand new Canon mirrorless camera or the new OM system, OM1, or whatever happens to catch your eye. It helps us out a lot. Thanks so much, folks, for doing that. And finally, a tip of the cap to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that love inkjet printing, and they help us love inkjet printing because they make it so much easier for us. Easier with knowledge, suggestions for projects, figuring out what kind of paper to use for particular subjects, whether it be landscape or portraits, ideas for cool things like photo scrapbooking, just a little bit of everything. And then once you know what you want to do or figure out what you want to do and learn how to do it, then you can get all the supplies right there. You don't have to go shopping around at five different sites. Everything that you need right there at Red River Paper. and you'll know that the quality that you receive is excellent. The paper and all the accessories that go with it, they're just a dream come true for people who love inkjet printing. And for people who don't love inkjet printing yet, they can help you get there. A big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. And also remember, they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the interview and all the good AI stuff. Working on some big stuff for next week. Big announcements coming. You got to come by. Until then, have a great week. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.